World War II was total war, as much industrial as military, pitting the massive manufacturing might of the United States against the Axis powers, Germany, Japan, and Italy. While not immediately apparent to our enemies, the U.S. had three distinct advantages. Its location was far from the battlefield. There were plentiful natural resources, and there was a huge, diverse workforce positioning the U.S. for victory.
A City at War, Chicago, a new documentary by executive producer, writer-director John Davies, and by a co-executive producer, editor and director of photography, Brian Calles, and hosted by Bill Curtis, makes its national public television premiere this Memorial Day weekend on more than 100 stations. Lakeshore Public Radio spoke with Calles, who back in 2005 was a production manager at Lakeshore Public Television. He is now living in Los Angeles and making documentaries like A City at War, Chicago, which will air on Lakeshore PBS on May 28th at 9 p.m. So, Brian, what is the film about?
City at War, Chicago is about nearly everything that happened in Chicagoland during World War II. And we're talking about production, we're talking about the political landscape, the neighborhoods, the different ethnic groups. There are German internment camps that took place in Chicago, the development of the atomic bomb, Nazi spies, and of course, there were a lot of soldiers and sailors at that time. So the mob used it as an opportunity to make money off them with gambling and prostitution. So we talk about basically everything that happened in Chicagoland during the war.
Companies making cars, toys, and appliances would start producing guns, planes, and tanks.
In your opinion, what are the best parts of the film?
I really have an affection for old propaganda movies, partly because they're just so corny, but also they were really earnest, and this was how they got information out to people. And so we used a lot of old propaganda movies as they were intended, but we also kind of stole their imagery to illustrate a lot of the things that we needed illustrating in the film. So they really came in handy that way. So one particular part, I can't say. I just think I'm really happy with the fact that we were able to find so much great footage and so much great color footage. It's getting harder and harder to find film from that era that no one has already seen before.
Yeah, how did you guys find all that?
We have an excellent researcher, Polly Pettit, in Washington, D.C., and we kind of do our own online searches and look through the National Archives and kind of put the troll out for any home movies. We're really big into home movies, John Davies and I, the director, and we like to use stuff that you haven't seen before. So we really do deep dives into archives that haven't been transferred from film yet, or we get home movies that just haven't been ever seen by anyone outside of the family.
What inspired you to make this film?
We made a film a couple years ago called Heroes on Deck, World War II on Lake Michigan. And it's the story of how more than 100 World War II airplanes ended up on the bottom of Lake Michigan. There was an aircraft carrier training program that went on in the 40s, during World War II rather, because it was protected. You couldn't train pilots on aircraft carriers in the West or East Coast or Gulf of Mexico for fear of enemy submarines and attack. So someone had the bright idea, we have an inland sea. It's called the Great Lakes. So in doing that story, we came across a statistic that said more than 40% of all war material made in World War II came out of Chicago.
Coastal cities shouldered much of the burden, but Midwestern cities like Detroit and especially Chicago were of vital importance too.
We thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. We kind of filed that away. And then as we were sort of touring with that film, we realized, you know, someone should really tell the story of what happened in Chicago during World War II. And then we thought, well, why don't we tell that story? So we kind of started looking more into the subject, and we found that not only the manufacturing, but as most people know, in the area, Chicago is a city of neighborhoods. So you had Japanese neighborhoods, you had Polish, you had Greek, you had Black, you had Hispanic, you had all the ethnic groups, all the racial groups. And really, everyone had to come together to sort of to fight the Axis.
I remember a boy in the neighborhood was killed in action. And the whole neighborhood, different ethnic groups, Polish, Greek, Armenian, the whole neighborhood went into a kind of mourning. He was a son for every family.
Companies became weaponized, so to speak. Companies that were once making tin cans are now making torpedoes.
Companies making cars, toys, and appliances would start producing guns, planes, and tanks.
Companies that were once making cars are now making Jeeps and plane engines. Even the Chicago Roller Skate Company, who were making roller skates, they ended up making grenades. Everybody was involved, so it was all hands on deck. Every man, woman, and child, race, color, or creed, had to get involved and, you know, defeat a clear evil, you know, the Nazis.
The most notable saboteur was Hans Haupt. Born in Germany, he emigrated to Chicago with his parents, and he spoke English without a trace of a German accent. He was a member of the Lane High School ROTC, and it was recalled how much he loved wearing that uniform. He would strut around the house in that uniform.
Ultimately, Haupt returned to Germany to enroll in the Abwehr, the German spy school, where he and his small group were trained to sabotage railway lines, essential wartime factories, and if possible, steal secrets.
So what was Northwest Indiana's involvement during World War II?
Northwest Indiana, as many people know, heavy-duty steel production. U.S. Steel is there. Inland Steel was there at the time. So anything that you needed heavy steel with, which is basically everything that you need to make a tank or a plane or a Jeep or a gun, came out of Northwest Indiana. But as far as there's also, throughout the whole state, there were places like Allison's airplane engines, Studebaker, Eli Lilly made plasma, Calumet Region for Steel, Guide Lamps made cartridge cases, South Bend toys made tent poles. So really, it was, again, all hands on deck. Every company that was making non-war material before the war was now employed to make war material. So Northwest Indiana was a huge steel producer. Massive amounts of steel came out of that area at the time.
You once worked at Lakeshore Public Television.
I was a production manager at WYIN, now Lakeshore Public Media, back in 2005, I believe. And we did everything from commercials and news and programs and all of that, and always had a love for the area. I grew up in Cedar Lake, actually. I love telling Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana stories. So it's great that Lakeshore is going to be running City at War.
And tell us when that's running again.
It's going to be running Memorial Day, May 28th at 9 p.m.
The man who lived across the street from us came out of his house, running down the steps. "The war is over," he said. "The war is over."
For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Sharon Jackson.